This is Joy Peterson interviewing Donna Duncan. This is tape 2, side 1, May 26, 1988. Quilters on File, JDP 28. Donna, we were talking about the idea that you could quilt, you could tie a quilt that had extra loft, but you wouldn't think of actually quilting through an extra loft batting. Now, you were saying that Michael's was not made with extra loft.
No, I didn't think he needed it that warm, so I put a traditional mountain mist in there and tied it. But a quilt that is tied is going to be warmer than a quilt that is quilted, because there's space in there for air to be, for warm air to be. At least that's my understanding of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you give away any of your quilts?
I have not yet given away any of my quilts. I have made some small quilted items, such as a tote bag or that sort of thing, that I have given away. Years ago, I used to knit a lot, and I knitted afghans, and I felt like sometimes people didn't appreciate them as much as I appreciated them. And there were several years that I just made Christmas, every Christmas gift that was given was a handmade gift. And I finally got to feeling like maybe people thought that it was no effort for me, and I realized that it was a lot of effort. So I haven't given away any of my quilts yet. Maybe when I get more done, I'll be a little more generous with them, but I'm keeping them pretty close to home right now.
Do you quilt for other people?
No. Quilting is too... It's a joy to quilt, but it's too much work to put a financial price on it at this point. There may be a lot of things that I think and do differently 5-10 years from now that I do now, so I don't know.
Can you put a monetary value on quilts?
I don't think you would ever get for quilting what it is worth. I suppose you could put a monetary value on it. I observed a lady making bobbin lace one time, and I asked her, was she making it for someone or was it for herself? This was after I had gotten a little bit burned over too many gifts that I had made. And she said that she was making it for someone for sale. And I said, oh, but you'd never give what your time was worth. And she said, no, but I put a high enough price on it that they recognize that they have something of value. So while she wasn't getting what she felt her time was worth, she felt like she was getting truly appreciated for it. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to put a monetary value on something that has so much, not only time, but creative energy. That we and a one-of-a-kind thing that once it's gone, we'll never make another one just like we have.
What do you do with old quilts when they begin to wear out?
I can't cut into them. There's a quilt that was my grandmother's that had every other block had a fabric that had dry rotted, and just to touch it, it looked like you had slit it with a razor blade. I left it at grandmother's house because it was in bad shape and I didn't want it. And I didn't want to be selfish. I felt like I was hauling every quilt out of her house, and I felt like my brother and my dad should have some of the quilts as well. So I left that particular quilt, and a year later I was back and it had been on the table all that time, and the mice had gotten it. And they had eaten maybe an 8-inch hole out of one of the borders on the back side. So I decided that better that I have it than the mice have it, so I brought it home. I said that I was going to take that quilt and I was going to cut it apart and make a vest or make wall hangings or make something out of it. My mom picked up the scissors and said, "Here are scissors." And I said, "Oh no, I can't cut it yet. I have to think about it. I don't know which borders I want to save and which borders I want to cut away." So we didn't cut it. And then Daddy said, "Well, I think that quilt is Julia's," which was his great-grandmother, my great-great-grandmother. Well, then I got to thinking about that, and I thought, if that was Julia's quilt, I cannot cut it apart. So I still have it, and it's intact, except for the part where the mice ate, and for one little part where I, not thinking what I was doing, I pulled loose a piece that was dry-rotted, and it's gone. But I can't cut into them. So what do I do with old quilts? I fold them up. I love them. But I have not yet been able to bring myself to cut apart somebody else's work. I would hate to think my work was cut apart 100 years from now.
Do you know your great-grandmother Julia's name?
She was Julia Hall Everett, I think. I've got it on a piece of paper if you would like for me to look, and I know exactly where the paper is.
Why don't you? I think we need that for the record.
I have trouble remembering which one is the great and which one is the
Well, yes, this is just something we've been taught to do. We just let it run. If there's any interruption, why, the researcher realizes it's still been running.
Okay. I am mistaken. Julia is my great-grandmother. And her name was Julia Everett Lucas. She was born in 1859. And my great-great-grandmother was Elizabeth Charlotte Hall. And she was born in 1830. And Daddy doesn't know if it was Julia's quilt or Charlotte's quilt. Either way, it's quite an old quilt. And I don't know how he knows that. I don't know if he really remembers, but that's what oral history is. This is what we can remember. I am lucky that my grandmother had a lot of this information written down about her ancestry. I can trace further back on my grandmother Austin's family tree than anybody else's.
Would you like to insert some of that information in your file?
I would be glad for a copy of this family tree
to be
included.
If we could put that family tree through a copier, that way the researcher has a way of going back in Tennessee and finding the roots. Some researchers will go for that purpose.
This goes back as far as 1815.
Are you in a position here in Eminence where you can get a copy of that and mail it to us?
Yes.
I'd appreciate it. I'd rather not take it myself.
Right. This is a copy that Daddy had, so I'm...
Well, I think that makes your file that much more thrilling for the researcher to go through, and then when your grandchildren go down to look in the archives and find out something about you, they also can find all of this other information.
I won't have any grandchildren probably looking in my file since I don't have any children. But perhaps my nephews might be looking, or my grandchildren in quilting, perhaps.
Right.
People who I have taught.
Have you ever entered a quilt in a show or a contest, a state fair, a county fair?
I entered one small quilt in a quilt contest in Massachusetts, I think, or Connecticut. I'm sorry, I cannot even remember. This was this spring. It was my first time to enter a quilt in any competition. I've entered a quilted vest in the Henry County Fair. I forgot about that. It didn't win a ribbon, but it was there anyway. I think it was in a miscellaneous category, for one thing.
Would you be willing to loan a quilt to a show or a museum?
Yes, I would be willing and pleased.
In your opinion, has there been any change in people's attitudes about quilting?
To a certain degree, there has been. I think as more people are aware that quilting is more than simply making bed covers, that quilt making is an art form of one type, I think people's attitude toward quilt making is going to change. I really like to use the term quilt making too. I suppose it's because I have more tops done than whole quilts done. And the term quilt making involves the total process of not just the piecing and the quilting, but the actual design process and the decision making and the application of color. So I like to use the term quilt making, though I generally say quilting.
I do too, and I really like the clarification that you gave us. I think that adds a lot of worth to the tape, and I would like to include that in my conversation. What is the significance of quilting in your life?
That's a hard question to answer. I don't know if everybody who does this oral history pauses at this point. It's an artistic expression, and it's also a reaching back to the past, to my roots, doing things that women have done for years and years, and continuing that into the future. I think quilt making is such a tactile art. I know there are people who design with computers. I can't design with computers. I want two handful of pencils, colored pencils, and a ream of paper, and a stack of fabric around me. And that's when I design the best. And I think that's what quilt making is actually the tactile art. I had another thought while I was talking. I forgot what I was saying, so I'll leave it at
what
that.
What value is there in quilt making for you?
I'm not sure that I'm understanding the question.
What role does it play in your life? Why do you quilt?
Why do I quilt? For the pleasure of doing it. For the creative enjoyment of doing it. And again, I think, you know, going back to my beginnings of being a math major, is so orderly. That's probably why I enjoy piecing as much as I do, because piecing is so orderly and precise. Also my beginnings as a seamstress, as a person who has always sewed. It's just a part of my life. I can't imagine not having a needle handy. There is probably a needle in every room of this house except the kitchen. And I wouldn't be surprised to find one in there. And there is probably a pen in every room of this house, because I keep dropping them. I have a pen cushion in the living room. It's simply there, not for use, but for putting those stray pens I keep finding. Instead of running upstairs with it, I just stick it in this pin cushion, and eventually they go upstairs.
Where are your what are your favorite colors to use in a quilt?
My favorite color is yellow, which is very hard to use in a quilt because it's so intense, and it just a little dab will do you. Red is a favorite color of mine. And I didn't realize how important red was as a color to me until my husband brought home a red sweater for me one day. And he said, why did you pick red? And he said, well, every time you're in the stores, when you look at sweaters, you always look at all of them. But you always touch the red ones. And he had noticed that I always reached out and touched, patted the red ones. And I realized that red, just I have an affinity for red. I don't know if this is something that's inborn or what. My grandmother liked red, and I didn't know that until recently. I knew Granddaddy liked red. In fact, he was one of the first people in our community to have a red truck. Everybody had, you know, trucks just came in black. Farm trucks were always black. And when they came out with colors for trucks, he had a red truck. And I heard it said that Granddaddy thought the two greatest things in the world were the color red and electricity. And so I knew that Granddaddy liked red. And then when I was getting some of Grandmother's quilts, I said something to Mom about she always had red in them. And Mom said that red was a favorite of Grandmother's. She didn't wear it much. She wore navy. And if you look at things that she's got, that she made, she has a lot of navy in her quilts because that's what she wore. She was a large woman. But she always had a little touch of red, and it might be rickrack or it might be a red dot or something. So I don't know if I learned that or if that's just inborn. So I like to use red. And I love browns. And perhaps that's because I wear brown so well. So I like to use red, brown, rust, yellow.
What fabrics do you use?
I'm still just 100% cotton fabrics. That's what I was taught when I first started quilt making. And I enjoy the feel of cotton and the look of cotton, and I have really not branched out into the other fabrics yet. I found out that I can spend enough money just staying in one type of fabric. If I started branching out, I'm afraid I would be spending too much money altogether, so I just stay with cottons.
How much of a particular fabric do you usually purchase?
It depends on my economic status at the time. It depends on whether or not it's on sale. I like to always get a half yard. One reason I like to get a half yard is if you throw a quarter yard into the washing machine to pre-wash it, it gets all crunched up and wrinkled. And I found out that a half yard withstands that a lot better. So I usually buy a half yard. If I really like it, I'll get maybe a yard or two. If I'm just crazy about it, I'll get three. And if it's on sale, I'll get more.
Do you have much inventory of fabrics on hand?
I have more than I like for people to realize. I'm a little bit ashamed of how much I have because I have so much. And I justify it by saying, well, I got this on sale. I have probably half of my inventory I got at $1.50 a yard. I like to go shop. Well, my birthday is in July. And the summer sales are the first week of August, and so I generally have a little extra money about that time of the year, so I can hit those fabric sales and come out with some pretty good buys.
What size needle do you use?
I use a number 10 quilting for piecing, and I use a number 12 quilting Japanese for quilting. I've always sewed with a small needle. Even dressmaking, I always used betweens, and the shortest between that I could find in those little packets that have all sizes, I would always use the smallest two needles and generally discard the rest of the packet for dressmaking.
Do you do much with your sewing machine?
I do some piecing with my sewing machine. I enjoy hand piecing, but you can get more done quicker on the sewing machine. Depends on the function of the quilt, whether I want it to be something that we're going to use and it's going to get a lot of wear, and I generally do that on the sewing machine. If it's an easy pattern to execute on the sewing machine, I'll do it on the sewing machine. If it's got narrow points or small pieces, I want to do it by hand. I apply the bindings by machine initially, and then I flip over on the back and of course do that part by hand. I join the backing by machine when I have to join the backing.
You're a quilt by machine.
I never have. With the exception of one placemat, I have not done any quilting on the machine. I would like to, but I think I need to get a walking foot for my machine before I attempt that. I did make one placemat and one coaster for Michael's apartment at Lexington for a little 3-week term, which pleased him when he opened up his box and discovered that there was a little gift there of a placemat to make him feel like he was at home.
What kind of thread do you use?
I usually use the cotton-covered polyester, the Coats and Clarks or J&P Coats. I'm not sure the company name now. I have the Metrosine sampler that is the all cotton, and I was given that was given to me by my mother-in-law. She is very generous, and she always wants to know what I want for Christmas or birthday, and she is very willing to mail order anything that I ask for. So generally I copy ads out of magazines and send to her and say, take your pick, I would like any of these things. And I try to select a variety of price range so that she can select whatever she wants, so she can feel like she's shopping, really. So she gave me the Metrosine sampler, which I thought was wonderful, but I haven't used it that much yet. I received it for Christmas.
Do you think the quality of thread is similar to what you've been using?
I really haven't used enough to tell yet, so I don't know.
What kind of batting do you prefer?
I have used the Mountain Mist traditional batting with good success, and I like it. I have used a cotton batting. I like the Fairfield cotton classic batting, which is 80% cotton and 20% polyester. I really like it. I like the flat appearance that it gives, which is close to the same appearance that antique quilts have. So I have used that some as well. And I have used the Fairfield traditional needle punched batting. I like to use a different batting for different functions, and I'm still experimenting as far as batting is concerned.
Do you launder the cotton classic before you use it?
Yes, I do. And it scared me to death the first time I put that in my washing machine, and I only put in enough for a garment, for a vest. I just cut off what I wanted to use because I couldn't stand the thought of something 80 by 90 inches that was made of cotton in my washing machine, so I just put a small piece in it. And I was pleased with the results. And I continued to cut that batting up until I had used it all, and then I purchased one recently to put inside the quilt that I started at Shagertown. And I put the whole batting in the washing machine and just sort of sat on the edge of my seat until I could take it out and get it in the dryer and get it out again. I don't dry it completely dry in the dryer. I dry it till it's almost dry, and then I lay it on the bed to finish drying.
Do you wash your quilts?
Yes. One reason I wash my quilts is, I suppose, it was what was done in the country when I was growing up. You always washed your quilts, and it never occurred to me that I might be damaging my quilt at all. And of course, these were quilts with cotton batting, 100% cotton batting. We just always washed our quilts, and I want to make things strong and sturdy enough that I can wash them. I believe quilts should be used, so if they're going to be used, they're going to get dirty and they're going to have to be washed.
Do you have any opinion about bearding or migration?
I've had a little bearding with the Mountain Mist on the dark fabric. There's a quilt I've been working on that has some purple, and I've noticed bearding in that. But not enough to deter me from using it.
You said you do use a floor frame and a hoop.
Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer one over the other?
Again, it's a matter of function. The floor frame is nice if you're doing straight lines, things that you can quilt towards you, or as grandmother did, fan quilting or shell quilting. If it's a feathered design, I don't think that it's practical to use the floor frame. So in that case, I like to use the round hoop. And I do like a round hoop as opposed to an oval hoop. I have an 18-inch hoop, which is as far as I can reach. That's the length of my arm. Any longer would be too long. So I like to use the hoop
You ever use the hoop on a stand?
I never have. I don't have one of those. Possibly when I get more money, I might get one of those too.
How have the materials used in quilting changed?
I've only been quilting 5 years, and I'm not sure they have changed that much in the length of time that I have been quilting. I do observe in magazines, I think that they're much, I don't know, some of the fabrics are much more subdued, and then other fabrics are much bolder. So I think that they have, the fabrics have taken a lot of different directions in recent years.
Do you sign your quilts?
Yes, I generally quilt my initials or my name, depending on the size of the quilt, into the quilt, and also quilt the date into the quilt. If it's a small quilt, I just do my initials, particularly if it's a quilt that I don't think it's going to be around for, you know, 50 years or something, if it's going to be used and perhaps not have a long life. My initials is sufficient. But if it's something that I think is going to outlive me or would hope would outlive me, I want my whole name in there so that people will know. I think a quilt that has a name on it is less likely to be cut up and used because it has a personality. It really belonged to a real person.
Where do you quilt your name on your quilt?
Usually the bottom right-hand corner if I can find a place to do it there. I try to do it unobtrusively. I want it to be there enough that you'll see it, but I don't want it to detract from the design.
Do you attend auctions or flea markets with the idea of purchasing quilts?
Auctions make me nervous. I'm always afraid I'm going to scratch my nose at the wrong time. And I have 6 or 7 quilts that were my grandmother's. And I want to make more quilts that are my own. There's the problem of storage. So I don't want to get too many quilts. So I always figure I could better spend my money to buy fabric than to buy it at auction. I am lucky to have some quilts that have been in the family.
Is there anything you can tell me about quilters in your family that we've not already discussed?
Not about quilters, but I do have one thing that I want to say about a relative. My mother's sister, one of my mother's sisters, was always taking classes. And I can remember when I was a little girl and I thought, she's always taking classes in millinery or organ playing or flower arranging, Japanese flower arranging. She lived in the city, so she had access to things like that. And she always, when she visited us, she always brought us new products. I remember when Pellon first came out, and she was the one who gave my mom a length of Pellon to use in my dresses. She would bring fabric for dresses for me, for skirts. Things that we were not able to find in our small town, but she could find in the city. And I think she had an influence on me in that she was always learning, that she felt like you were never too old to learn. So I think that she, while she did not quilt, she was a very important factor in my life in teaching me that I should continue to learn.
So I think we ought to have her name.
Her name was Marguerite Frazier. Marguerite Weaver Frazier. I will spell that. Marguerite. Weaver, Weaver. Frazier, Frazier.
Is she still living?
She is not still living. She died probably 10 or 12 years ago. She lived in Nashville, where most of my mom's people live. And we only saw that part of the family at Christmas or maybe once in the summer, so I didn't see her that often. They would come to visit from time to time, but more often we would visit them. And even today, it's because I didn't see her that regularly, I'll think of something and I think, I would like to tell Sis about that. Now, she was called by her family, she was called Sis. And so I called her Aunt Sis, which doesn't make any sense at all, but that's who she was to me. So she's still, I guess, still an influence in my life.
Right.
So there's Sis and my mom who taught me to sew, and then my grandmother under whose quilt I slept.
Perhaps before we conclude our this part of our interview, there are two things that I have to ask you. One of them is, I don't believe we said when your wedding day was, when you got married. This is Joy Peterson interviewing Donna Duncan in her home on May 26, 1988 for Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society, Quilters on File. This is JDP 28. Donna, we were saying that you'd gotten married at a particular time, and we hadn't said but a particular place. Now, you were married when?
I was married August 12, 1969 at Mount Tirzah Baptist Church at Tatumville, Tennessee, which is near Newbern. And actually, Tatumville is the name of the small community in which I live. I'll spell all of this, okay? Mount Tirzah is Mount, M-O-U-N-T, Tirzah, T-I-R-Z-A-H, Baptist Church. The community was named Tatumville, T-A-T-U-M-V-I-L-L-E, which is near Newbern, Tennessee, in Dyer County, Tennessee.
D-Y-E-R?
D-Y-E-R.
Thank you. The other thing, as we conclude this portion of our interview, I wonder if there's any, if there are future projects that you would like to mention that you have in your mind. Have you got any particular future projects?
I have a number of future projects, of which include some traditional things. I have a Lady of the Lake quilt that I would like to do, for which I've already purchased the fabric. I would like to
what
do
color?
Brown and blue, which sounds real strange, but I think it's going to have an antique look. That's not very creative, though, because that's just the same triangles over and over and over again. And that's going to be my project that I just take little bits and pieces around with me, and when I don't want to have to think about what I'm doing, I will have that to do. I'll probably do some other designs with that require more concentration and thought and more colors that I like to do at home, where I don't have to think them or don't have to have other things on my mind. I would like to do, even though I don't like doing applique, a princess feather design, which I saw in a magazine, and it was described historically as a quilt that was made of a yard of four pieces of fabric, each a yard wide and a yard long. And you do a princess feather applique onto each of these four pieces and then put them together and then add a border and put swag border on it. That appeals to me because it is historical. I don't want to just do things that are in the past, though. And even when I start doing something that is traditional, I always add my own colors and my own touches, or perhaps my own quilting design. So I would like to get into doing some more design and branching out that way. It's probably some pretty lofty goals, and I doubt that I'll get everything done that I would like to do in the amount of time that's available to me. When I quit working, this sort of brings to mind something. When I quit working at the Board of Education in Shelbyville, there were a number of my co-workers who were really concerned about what I would do with myself when I quit working. Well, I hadn't even taken up quilting then. And I told several of them that if I did everything that I wanted to do and didn't add anything to my list of things that I wanted to do, it would take two lifetimes to get that done. Well, now I have added quilting to it, quilt making to it, and I probably won't get everything done that I want to do, but I want to continue to grow and to learn more about quilt making, and perhaps for my quilt making to make a difference in somebody else's life, if they can learn to enjoy it like I do it. I don't know, it just gives me a lot of pleasure. And even when there are bad, dreary days, or perhaps more work than I want to do, or the kind of work that I don't want to do, if I can just get a little time of quilting in that day, or sketching, or drafting, then I can get through that other stuff that goes along with the humdrum of life. I think I got off the subject.
No, I think you're right on the subject, because we want to have a feeling of what quilting means to you, and I think that sums it up pretty well. Is there anything else you'd like to add to the tape before we start looking at your various projects?
One thing I would like to mention, this was a very small project, but I think it was significant in that I have put myself in a position of being known about sometime in the future. There was a time capsule buried in Eminence last September. And they were, actually what it was, they buried a burial vault. They were trying to get enough stuff to fill up a vault, but that's a lot of space. And they had the school children putting things in it, and they asked different organizations, and they asked the church, my husband, they asked him to put something in it to represent the church. And he mentioned it to me, and he said, I don't think they're going to get the thing filled up. So I got to thinking about it, and about 2 weeks before it was to be done, I decided maybe I needed to put a little quilt in there. And I didn't think I could get a little quilt pieced. I mean, even 15 inches pieced, quilted, bound, washed, and dried, and something written about it in 2 weeks' time. So I decided I'll get Pam McDaniels to help me. So I pieced it. I picked out the colors, and I pieced it. And then I gave it to her, and she quilted it. And while she was quilting it, I wrote a little biography of myself and a little biography of her, and some thoughts of my own about quilt making in the 1980s. And then I gathered up 3 or 4 magazines and a couple of catalogs and some KHQS newsletters. And we got all that together. And when she finished quilting it, she brought it back to me because she had other things to do too. And I bound it and washed it and dried it. And my dryer quit that day. And I had to call my good friend who happens to be my husband's secretary and said, when you go home for lunch, I need to go to your house and dry my quilt. And so we put this 15-inch square in the time capsule. Well, we loved our little square so much that we couldn't stand to see it gone forever. So for Christmas, I pieced 2 more and she quilted 2 more. And we each have one hanging in our homes now. We didn't get it done in time for Christmas. We got it done about a month ago. But it's done now, and we put September 1987 on it, even though we have finished it much later than that. It does represent the moments in the time capsule.
Well, do you think you can get some information together from newspaper clippings or your design or something that we can put in your folder that is about that
sure.
experience? Pictures of it and things like that. Anything
right.
you'd have, and I think that'd be fascinating. When does the time capsule get open?
It's supposed to be opened in September of 2087. It is supposed to, I understand that it is documented in the county records and in the state records, and there is supposed to be a stone placed there, and there is no stone there yet, so I hope that they get it marked. It's in the town, what is called a town square, which isn't square but triangular, which is right in downtown Eminence, right in the city. Center of the town.
Good. Well, when the researchers look for this, they'll be able to tell where it is.
I hope so.
Get something in your folder about it.
I hope somebody finds it.
Now, if you have pictures that you're going to include in your folder that you're going to get copies of, we ought to talk about them on the tape so that I can write up each of the quilted items that you talk about.
Okay.
So let's go on with that.
Let's see, let's start. Now, I have a lot of pictures, so
okay.
if we're doing too many, you can say this is too many.
Well, Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society will pick up the expense of it if you don't mind getting them duplicated so that we have them. I think we ought to talk about them.
These are the quilts in this little section that I submitted their pictures for my application for the KHQS scholarship.
Oh, and they're numbered.
And they're numbered, and I have a key. And I've got all the information about them.
Oh, good.
So that you don't have to
so
write
you can
all
duplicate
of that
it.
Down. I can duplicate
it. Oh, that's wonderful.
Just straight from my application.
Uh-huh. Well, that'll be a great help. I was on that committee, so I remember seeing them. It's great. Oh, well, this will be a real addition. You did some applique here on number 5.
Yes, that's a Hawaiian applique. I really enjoyed doing that. I forgot to mention that one when I was telling what classes I had taken. That was a class I took from Patty Daniel at Calico Mouse. And I really enjoyed doing that. That was shortly before my back surgery. And in fact, I finished quilting that. No, I haven't quilted it. I'm sorry. I took that piece to the hospital with me and worked on it before my surgery. Of course, after my surgery, I couldn't. Mm-hmm. And I finished it up in January of 87. That is the clamshell, number 6, is the clamshell. And I have finished piecing that.
Will you have a final picture of it?
I will make I'll make a final picture of it.
Good.
I don't have one of it, but I will.
Uh-huh. Well, that'd be great. That's beautiful. Mm. Now, is number 8 a class that you took?
No, that was just, let's see, Kay Wood's book, and I cannot remember the name of it.
Irish Chain, isn't it?
It is an Irish Chain, but it's, Kay Wood's wrote a book on how to quit piece.
Oh.
And that, I don't remember the title of the book,
uh-huh.
And that's what I did that from.
Is number 9 your initial?
That's my first quilt.
Mm-hmm. It's a sampler quilt that you did at American Accents.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My goodness, that pig. Where did you do number 11? Was that a class?
No, that was a pattern from Wild Goose Chase. And I cut out the pieces before we went to Centrifuge. And so I was on a bus with 18 young people. And I took that along for my sanity, and I worked on it on the bus and also probably while they were in classes
mm-hmm.
at Centrifuge in South Carolina.
And you've made some pillows
I've
here.
I've made some pillows. Those are machine applique.
Oh, did you take a class in machine applique?
No, I just did that on my own from a book, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think having grown up in the country makes me a little bit more independent in striking out and doing something on my own without having to take a class. When I grew up, you just had to do everything on your own. We didn't have, we had one automobile, and sometimes Daddy had it, and sometimes Mom had it. And so we just couldn't take off and go to town anytime we wanted to. And living 30, 40 miles from Louisville, I think very carefully before I sign up for a class.
Mm-hmm.
So I have done a lot of things on my own that I have just learned to do from instruction. I follow instructions pretty well from a book, particularly if they're well written. That's going to be a Christmas wall hanging, number 13.
Uh-huh.
That was machine pieced. And I just did it one Sunday afternoon because I needed to do something like that.
Mm.
I just needed to piece something that I could see a finished product at, you know, in a quick amount of time.
These are nice seminal
pieces
in the same picture.
The seminal I did from a book, too, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Number 14?
Number 14 is a tote bag that I made using pre-quilted fabric, but the block in the center is hand-quilted. It's machine-pieced and hand-quilted. So there is some hand-quilting on there,
mm-hmm.
even though I did use the pre-quilted
mm-hmm.
fabric.
And number 15 must be Becky Olson's class
on
the schoolhouse. Mm-hmm. She has a new book out now.
Oh.
Well, I'm glad we have a picture of you on number 16. That's good. And it shows your vest that you made an American accent. Did you make this one an American accent?
Right, that's the one I made.
Yeah. And one with you in your home, that's good. And number 19, it looks like another sampler class.
It is a sampler class. It's the intermediate or advanced class that Barbara
Harp on drafting and the more advanced work. What do you call that kind of vest in number 21?
That's called a blooming vest. It's made of 6 layers of fabric. You stitch them all together in a grid, and then you cut through the top 5 layers in an X-type cut. When you wash it, the top 5 layers bloom out. They sort of fray out. They don't ravel, but they fray out. It's really an interesting vest to wear because I always get comments on people want to pat me on the back. They want to touch it. And even strangers, and they'll come up to say something about it, and I'll say, well, you can pat my back if you want to. You can touch it if you want to. Because I can tell they really want to touch
right.
it.
Is this a Jacob's Ladder?
Yes.
Number 22.
Right, and that's where I have sort of taken a little bit of liberty with the colors. I have used some real strong colors. When I first started that piece, I felt like it looked like stained glass, the combination of the colors. Mm-hmm. And so that is a large wall hanging. It's about 54 inches square that still is not completed, but it's almost completed, and it will be for my husband to hang in his office.
Oh.
And I call it Jacob's Dream. I have used an angel, the outline of an angel, as a quilting motif, and they're going up and down the ladder.
Great.
That is the
that
one's not numbered.
On
that just got in that envelope.
Okay.
That is the time capsule.
Oh, it is.
Hanging.
Oh, good.
So that's it.
All right.
And then that's a picture of Pam and me.
We need to spell her last name.
Her name is MacDonald. M C D A N N O L D. Everybody spells it wrong, but that's
well,
correct.
It's not common the way McDaniels is. Yeah. Well, if you will get those done for us and give us a bill on them, that would be a great help. And any others that you have there, well, I think we should do the same thing.
This package is just pictures of my class people.
Oh, I see.
People who have taken my classes. And I don't know if you want any of that or some of it or...
I think we want whatever you would like to put in, and we can reimburse you for it, so you can think about that.
Okay.
But who are some of the people that you have had?
Local people. That's Brenda Black and Star Willis.
Mm-hmm.
I've had Alice Van Meter, who is my husband's secretary, and Pam MacDonald was in my first class. If you need a nearby quilting friend, the best way is to just teach one. That was taken at the quilt show, KHQS quilt show, last year.
Oh,
Okay, that got in there with me. That picture is a joke. It's the ugliest possible strip quilted vest using the greatest variety of fabrics that Pam MacDonald could come up with. It includes tassels. And it has one piece of cotton fabric in it.
It's truly
ugly. She wrote a whole 2-page speech to say about it when I was trying it on. And I mean, you can tell by looking at the pictures, we can barely contain ourselves.
Oh, that's marvelous. That's marvelous. Well, as I say, if you want to get any of these, or all of them, oh, there's one nice one of Pam.
She finished hers. And we used hers for the demonstration vest at the last class to show how to line it.
Oh,
so she went home with a finished vest.
How many classes have you taught?
Let's see. 2 strip quilted classes, 2 strip quilted vest classes, and 5 beginner classes.
Well, I think your best bet is if you want to have these in your file, which I think would be marvelous, be if you would number them, and if it isn't too much trouble, give us some names on these people.
Okay.
But that'll be up to you, how much time and energy you have to go into it, because there does seem to be two or three dozen different pictures here. I think you're handling it that way for the scholarship for Shakertown application. Worked out very well, and you can kind of think that through in the light of what your folder will contain.
Okay.
That would be great.
These are pictures of the time capsule that we're going to have. And I don't know how much it, I mean, you wouldn't want, I know you wouldn't want all of this, but that's just some more pictures of
the time capsule. Mm-hmm. I think it would be great to have something in about the time capsule and the
There is a picture in there of me throwing a shovel full of dirt in to bury it. After the chairman of the committee and the mayor and a few other dignitaries had thrown in a shovel full of dirt, they allowed anybody that wanted to throw in a shovel full.
Goodness.
That is the vault there that they tried to fill up. It was nowhere near filled. People were putting things in at the last minute. One lady put in her nurse's uniform that she graduated from nursing school. One of the policemen put in a Kentucky law book. And I can't think. You know, I think the home economics teacher put in a McCall's pattern book, you know, the big book like you
mm-hmm.
look at the store. So there were a lot of different things put in there. There I am
there
putting
you
in
are.
A shovel full
mm-hmm.
of dirt.
What an experience. How big is Eminence?
Population is about 2,400.
Oh, that's
so it's
great.
Not very big.
Yeah, that's great.
I have one more. These are blocks that I've entered in block contests.
Oh, really? My goodness.
Would you care for any of those photographs?
Now this shows a bunch of them.
That shows the finished quilt in the next picture.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah. You do beautiful work. Mm.
Thank you.
Oh, that's a great picture. Is that in this one?
No. This is in the Marshfield Hills quilt block contest from last year.
Huh.
As
now, there's an applique.
Let's see, that one was, yes, and that one won.
Did it really?
Yeah, not first place. I mean, there were nine winners, and that one was one of the winners.
You want to describe it for the tape?
It's called Oak Leaf. It's a traditional block. It's very similar to Hawaiian quilting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just done on muslin with a floral print.
Is it one piece like Hawaiian?
Mm-hmm. It's one piece.
Goodness.
And that's the finished quilt. They took the nine winners and made them into a quilt and had a drawing of the nine winners, and I was not the person that won the quilt. One of the people won the quilt, and the other eight of us got a photograph of it. So
that's nice.
It is nice to have it.
It looks great up there. That sure got moving, hasn't it? Oh, you do great work. Pot of gold.
Yeah, that was for the cranberry quilt festival competition. So it's cranberries in
mm-hmm.
at the end of the rainbow.
Goodness, you have really done a lot of work.
Well, I couldn't do any quilting that year, so I just did piecing. And I was teaching classes at the time too, and
mm-hmm.
I felt like that I was demanding so much of my students, which I do demand a lot. I feel like if they pay to take classes, then they ought to get their money's worth. So I demand a lot of them. Well, I felt like I needed to set for myself goals, that I needed to show them that I was requiring a certain amount of work of myself in a week's time,
mm-hmm.
just as I was requiring of them work. But I didn't want to make the same sampler they did, so I was doing block contests, different things, and
yeah.
I would show them every week what I was working on so that they would see not just what we were working on in class, but to see that it was an ongoing experience.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
That's the block I entered in the Kentucky Kentucky Star Quilt Contest that the Kentucky Historical Society sponsored. Mm.
That's a beauty. Be sure and put a picture of that up there. That's nice. Oh, is this Shakertown?
That's Shakertown. And I've got 3 pictures of that.
Great.
That show its beginning to its end, which is sort of interesting to see. That's where I'm pinning. I mean, that's how it looked when I started pinning it up. So I started with the light colors and added the... Let's see, the next picture will show you where I added the rust. And then the next picture will show you where I added the dark brown. Well, it doesn't, does it? I guess that was this one. That's where I added the dark brown. So you know, you have a progression there.
Now, you've got that sewn together?
It is sewn together and basted and ready to quilt. That's Michael's lover's knot quilt.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, I think you're so smart to get so many pictures of your work. They get away from you.
They do. Or you forget to take a picture.
Right.
And it's nice to have the pictures where you can put them in your purse and carry them. Show them to people that are interested. I try not to bore other people with them.
Yeah, I don't have any grandchildren. I take my pictures around with me. Pictures of quilts. Let's see. Should I be taking any pictures now?
Well, I just don't know what else there is to take a picture of. I've got most of these things photographed.
Good. Well,
but if you wanted to take a picture of, if there's anything you want a picture of. And I wanted you to see my sewing room because
I know you are
teaching that type of workshop at Richmond. So I want you to see my sewing room.
Well,
you might
want to
take a picture up there.
All right.
And I don't have a picture of that churn dash. If you want a picture of it, or I can take a picture of it later. And
churn dash here?
Uh-huh.
Well, let's get a picture of it.
It's hanging here on this rail.
I think it's interesting that you've got this quilting motif. Here, do you make
your own templates? Yes,
and
that's the first one I ever did. And I cut that out with a razor blade.
And I cut
it out
of sandpaper. Is sandpaper and plastic? Oh, really?
Yeah, it's paper and
plastic.
It's really
strong and durable. Oh, that's great. You just laminate the 3 things together before you start cutting.
Perfectionist that I thought I'm going to take the fabric and cost me anything, and I'm going to hand quilt it, so I'm not
lot of effort. I'm going to have fun. And just truly, so I would look at things and I would say, oh, that needs to be taken off. That needs to be done a little bit better. And I'll say, no, that's close enough.
Oh, I know what you're saying. Well, thank you.
This is Joy Peterson. I'm doing an interview of Donna Duncan in her home for Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society. Donna, do I have your permission to make this interview, do it on tape?
Yes, you do.
Thank you. This is Quilters on File, and it's May 26, 1988. We're in Henry County?
That's correct.
Good, thank you. Would you please spell, say for the tape, your full name and spell it?
My name is Donna Austin Duncan. Donna, D-O-N-N-A, Austin, A-U-S-T-I-N, Duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N.
Thank you. And your spouse's full name, would you spell that? I guess you don't have to spell Duncan again.
Okay. His name is Michael R. Duncan. Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. And his middle initial is R.
Thank you. We are taping this interview in your home. Would you tell the tape where your home is?
My home is in Eminence, Kentucky. I live on South Main Street.
And it's in Henry County.
In Henry County.
Right. How long have you lived at this address?
I've lived here a little over 8 years. We moved here in November of 1979.
And where did you live before?
Before that, we lived in Mount Eden, Kentucky, which is in Shelby County.
Mount?
Eden, E-D-E-N.
In Shelby County. And how long did you live there?
We lived there since 1975, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 1975, in May of 75.
What does your husband do?
My husband is a Baptist minister. He's the pastor of the Eminence Baptist Church here in town.
Have you been employed outside your home?
Yes. You want me to start at the beginning?
Sure.
I was employed after college graduation by the Jackson City School System in Jackson, Tennessee. I taught 7th and 8th grade arithmetic for 1 year. After that, I worked at Union University in Jackson, Tennessee as a secretary in the alumni office, and I worked there for 2 years. Then I had a 1 year respite from work, and then my husband decided to go to seminary in Louisville. So I took a job at the seminary in Louisville, Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And I was the secretary to the director of graduate studies there for 3 years, from 1973 until 1976. Once again, I retired, this time for 2 years, and then I began working at the Shelby County Board of Education in Shelby County, Kentucky. It was a temporary job, and I stayed on for 5 years. So I quit working there in 1983 to become a full-time homemaker. And so far, I'm still a full-time homemaker.
Mm-hmm. You have any children?
No children.
Mm-hmm. Where were you born?
I was born in Nashville, Tennessee. My parents were living there in a suburb of Nashville, in Madison, Tennessee. And we lived there for a year after I was born, and then we moved back to my father's home area. which is near New Bern, Tennessee, which is in West Tennessee.
Would you spell New Bern?
N-E-W-B-E-R-N.
And are your parents still living?
Yes, they are still living at the same place where I grew up, and really the only home growing up I remember, mm-hmm. because I don't remember, of course, living in Madison, Tennessee.
And their names?
Their names are Wayne Larkin Austin and Lois Weaver Austin.
And Larkin is spelled?
L-A-R-K-I-N.
And Weaver?
W-E-A-V-E-R. My mother was from Nashville, Tennessee, which is why we lived there in my early years.
And your education?
I am a graduate of Union University. It's a small, private, liberal arts college in Jackson, Tennessee. I got a B.S. there with a major in mathematics. Thought of something else I was going to say, and it just flew out of my mind.
Let's go back, and where was your grade school?
Grade school was at New Bern Elementary School. I went there through eighth grade. And then I went to Dyersburg High School, which is in the same county that I grew up in.
And spell Dyersburg?
D-Y-E-R-S-B-U-R-G. Mm-hmm. That's in Tennessee.
And you graduated there?
Right, in 1965.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and when were you born?
I was born July 30, 1947.
And what is your religious preference?
I'm a Baptist. As is my husband, of course.
And we didn't say what your father's occupation was.
My father is a farmer. When he was actively farming, and at the time of my growing up, raised grain crops and cotton. And he had beef cattle as well.
And when you were in school, either high school or college, what were your aspirations, your career thoughts?
It's hard to remember, really. I remember that in high school, I did not want to be a teacher. But I don't think I knew what I wanted to be. And I was finally convinced by some people to take teacher training. And I really thought that's what I wanted to do when I was in college. I firmly believed it. After about a year of teaching, I decided that really was not the role I wanted. So I enjoyed doing secretarial work. And I was very happy doing secretarial work. It just didn't leave me enough time at home, and I felt pulled in many directions. Particularly since my husband is a minister, there's a lot of activity going on in our lives, and he is quite busy, and we found that the lifestyle of my being at home takes the edge off of that hectic pace that we were living.
Well, at the moment, what is your husband doing as far as this going back and forth to Transylvania, is it?
No, it's Lexington Theological Seminary. He's working on a doctorate of ministry, which is the practical doctoral degree for ministers. In January, he started this work, and he was there for a three-week term, which was really a high, I can't think of the word, but it was very hectic, very intense study. And then in the spring semester, he took one course, and he commuted 2 days a week. He's in a second three-week intense study now. And he'll have one more of these before he writes his dissertation or project. I'm not sure what the correct term for it is.
That takes him away a lot.
Well, a considerable amount. Mm-hmm. And while he's gone, I just make the best use of my time. I set up a sewing room while he was gone in the January term and got it about halfway done. And now that he's gone again, I'm going to work on it some more. Mm-hmm.
What have you been doing in this sewing room as far as setting it up, you say?
It's a tiny little room, and for 8 years it had junk in it, up practically to the ceiling. And so I took all the junk out and painted over the wallpaper, which was the cheapest way I could go. We do not own this house. It's church-owned property. So I painted the walls, and then I put in some metal shelving, and I had my sewing machine in there, and I put all my fabric in there, and an ironing board, and that's about all the room will hold. Mm-hmm. It's a funny-shaped little room. It's 12 feet long, and at one end it's 8 feet wide, and at the other end it's 5 feet wide. The bathroom, sort of, the way the bathroom is built, it cuts into the space of this room, so it's not a practical room for anything else, but it's a nice place for storage and for sewing machine work. It's not large enough to quilt in, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, the frames and hoops, and there's no room for an easy chair in there. But it's a nice little room. It's a nice place to have to call my own.
Right. When did you learn to quilt?
I learned to quilt in 1983. I took a course at Calico Mouse. No, I'm sorry, at American Accents, which later became Calico Mouse.
And that's where?
In Louisville, Kentucky. We're actually in Middletown. I had taken a two-hour lesson prior to that on how to quilt. They were supposed to teach us everything we needed to know about quilting in 2 hours' time, which was totally impossible. And that was in, I think, 1975. I didn't do any quilting at all from 1975 until 1983.
Where did you take the 1975 course?
It was offered through the Home Extension, Homemakers, and that was in Shelby County.
Do you remember the names of your teachers?
My teacher at American Accents was Mary Lee Younger. In the beginner class, Barbara Hart was my teacher for the intermediate class. I took a strip quilted vest class from Midge Gate. And then I've attended workshops and whatever through the last several years.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I elaborate on that? Or
this is as good a place as any, because we've come up with it, so why don't we go on and say where and who and under what circumstances that you can recall about seminars or workshops, learning situations.
The first workshop I attended was at Moorhead in 1986. And I took Becky Olson? Is that
right? That's right.
The schoolhouse strip or quick piece schoolhouse quilt. And I took a miniature course, and I cannot remember who the teacher was in that.
Where was it?
That was also at Moorhead. And I can't think who taught it. So I'll go on to the next one.
Right, right.
last year, when we met at Western Kentucky for our annual meeting, I took the clamshell course. Clamshell piecing, and Jolene Wilcher was the instructor in that. That was one that just really piqued my interest, and I really got started on that. Sometimes you start things at workshops and you bring them home and you don't get back to them, but that one I stayed with until I have it pieced and it's ready to quilt. Let's see, what else did I take? I took the Mariner's Compass class. You were in that class at Western that year.
And the teacher's
Karen
name?
Riggins was the teacher in that. And then I went to Berea last summer for the workshops. Allison Arnold taught a cube. It was a three-dimensional type thing. I forget the title of it, but it was a block where you set a cube in dimension. And I took Nancy Applegate's class in design. And I think you were in that class too. Let's see, what have I done since then? Oh, I went to Shakertown, of course.
Right.
And Flavin Glover was the instructor in that week's experience, and I really enjoyed working in that. I came up with a kaleidoscope design, which I'm quite pleased with, and I'll show it to you in a little moment.
I wish for the a tape sake, for the sake of the researcher, that while we've hit on Shakertown, that we can go into that experience in depth. Let's go back to the beginning of how you came upon the opportunity to go.
Well, if I go too far back to the beginning, you can tell me to run on forward.
No, it's fine.
In late 1986, I had back surgery, and I'm really going way back, but I want to tell you this. And I was not able to sit at the hoop or at the frame and quilt. And the only thing I was able to do was to read magazines and do sketches for a long time. When I finally got to where I was able to sit and do a little bit of piecing, I started entering block contests. And that sort of got me wedded for doing other kinds of competition. One of the block contests that I entered said, at the bottom of the instruction form of how to enter, it said, remember, you can't win if you don't enter. And I got to thinking about that, and then when I got the opportunity to enter an application for the scholarship, I decided, I was a little timid about doing it because I didn't think that I knew enough about quilting to receive that type of scholarship.
Well, let's go back now.
Okay.
What kind of scholarship, to where and by whom?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
It's a scholarship to the annual Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society's Quilters Retreat held at Shakertown, Kentucky, and it's sponsored by the Kentucky Quilt Project and the Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society, mm-hmm. and it's funded by the Kentucky Quilt Project, I believe. Now, where do I go?
So you entered
so
it.
So I entered right at the very last minute. I was just lucky. The day was beautiful, the day that I decided to take photographs. And I just had that one day that I could take photographs of some of my work to include with the application. So I took everything outside and took most of my photographs outside and ran them into Louisville to a one-hour processing thing, and while I was having it processed, I sat at one of the benches in Oxmoor Shopping Center and reviewed what I had written about my work so that when I got home, I would be able to type it in final form. So, I mean, it's nothing like doing everything at the last minute. If it weren't for the last minute, there's a lot of things I would never get done. I was really surprised when I got notification that I had received a scholarship. In fact, when I opened the mailbox and I saw this thick package, I said, well, they have returned my photographs. And I opened up the envelope, and there were my photographs, and I looked at the letter, and my mind said, thank you for entering. This is your photographs back. And I read that twice. And then the third time I read it, it said, you've won the scholarship. So I was very surprised, really, and I was just trembling when I realized that I had actually won the scholarship. My husband was out of town at a conference, and so I couldn't even tell him, so I called my best friend and told her, and so that was, in fact, that was about a year ago today, and the only reason I remember it, I got the notification on my dad's birthday, which is the 28th of May.
Now let's go forward a little and tell a little bit about what it meant to be in Shakertown, what you did in Shakertown.
The workshop was entitled Creative Design and Patchwork. And specifically, Flavin Clover does a lot of pictorial designs from log cabin blocks and kaleidoscope blocks. I didn't actually get into doing a pictorial design. It was just not something that I was able to handle within that week's time. But having seen her slides and her quilts during the course of the week, I have come up with some ideas of some things I would like to do in the future. So while I didn't come up with something anywhere near to equal hers, it got the wheels turning, and I was able to feel like I had grown a lot. There were only, I think, 14 or 15 present participants in this workshop. So we became a very close group, and it was just fun to be with quilters quilt makers for that week-long period when we concentrated fully on our work. I think we inspired each other. I know everybody inspired me, so.
Can we put, for the sake of the tape, the dates or approximate dates that this occurred?
The dates were October, something like the 19th through the 22nd or 3rd. It was a Tuesday through a Friday of 1987.
Will you be returning to Shakertown this year?
Yes. last year, I thought the only way I could go was if I got the scholarship. Having gone, it was such a good experience, I just decided that whatever birthday money or Christmas money that my parents and my parents-in-law gave me would be earmarked for going to Shakertown. So I went ahead and sent my $25 registration in the week after I got home. I should have just done it when I was there at Shakertown, but I had to come home and receive affirmation from my husband that it was okay to spend that much money again.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for telling us about that. If you think of anything more on it, feel free to interject it. How old were you when you learned to quilt?
I was 35. I learned to sew a long time before that.
When did you learn to sew?
I learned to sew when I was probably, I think I made my first skirt when I was 10. I had made aprons before that and doll clothes probably when I was around 8 or 9. So it seems like I've always had a needle in my hand. I can remember standing beside my mom, who made all of my clothes when I was a little girl. And I would stand behind her at the sewing machine, beside her at the sewing machine, and she would tell me when I could push the little lever for the back stitch at the beginning and the end of the seam. And that was a real trip for me to get to do the back stitch.
And so your mother was a sewer.
Right. Uh-huh. She made all of my clothes. I don't remember having any. I remember having one store-bought dress when I was 6. And then when I was 10, I remember having a skirt and blouse that was purchased. But other than that, my mom made all of my dresses and all of my pajamas. And of course, we purchased our coats and our underclothes, but she made most all of my dresses.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother. His name is Gary Wayne Austin. He is 3 years younger than I am. And he lives in Tennessee, next door to my parents on the farm.
He's a farmer?
He's a farmer. He also works at a place that constructs homes wreckers. They build wreckers onto trucks. I don't know what brand of trucks they purchase and then they build the wrecker on. He's always told me if I ever have car trouble and somebody comes to tow me, make sure it's a homes wrecker.
How do you spell homes?
H-O-L-M-E-S. He works in quality control. He's a perfectionist, and I would think somebody in quality control that's a perfectionist would really be a pain to work for. But he does that, and then he farms at night and on, or in the afternoons and on weekends.
What quilts did you make when you were learning to quilt?
My first quilt is a wall quilt. And it is a sampler quilt. It has 6 blocks in it. It has the Jacob's Ladder, Bright Hopes, Kansas Dugout, Dutchman's Puzzle, Drunkard's Path, and an applique block that's called Accent Rose, which was designed by American Accents for their use in their classes.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite pattern?
Ooh, that would be hard to say. I like things with triangles in them and little pieces and points. And I guess I'm like my brother, too. I am a perfectionist, which is one reason I'm so slow, because I keep working and working trying to get it just right. I really can't think what my favorite would be. I like things with movement. And a lot of times things that have triangles in it do have movement. I really like piecing. I'm not fond at all of applique. In fact, whenever I go to workshops and you have to put your first, second, and third choice, I will always put applique for my second choice, thinking that there is some trick that I don't know that I'm going to learn. But I don't want to take the chance on it being my first choice. So I always put it for my second choice, and I think maybe one day I'll get lucky and find out something that really makes me love applique. I know why I don't like applique. Would you like for me to elaborate
on
that?
Yes, by all means.
In 1975, I ordered a quilt kit out of a magazine. It was for a bicentennial star quilt, and it had tiny little pieces that you were supposed to applique, and it was a cotton poly fabric. And it was stamped, with the blue lines stamped on it. You were supposed to cut according to the lines. It was just impossible to work with, and those tiny little pieces in my first attempt at applique, I found it this week. It's still in the sack, and it has one block completed, and my work is totally horrible anyway. And I know that's why I don't like to do applique, but even knowing why, it doesn't help me an awful lot. So I admire beautiful applique. And I still have hopes that one day I'm going to do some applique. I purchased the Kentucky Medallion quilt book. It has some larger applique pieces than what I had been working with. So I have some hopes that I will maybe use that and get the fever for applique. Though I don't know what I'll do if I get the fever for any more things than what I'm already doing.
When you mention your interest in triangles and small pieces, have you tried the quick triangle method where they make the... Well, it's a quick method.
Yes,
half squares.
Right, triangles. Right. I have tried that. In fact, I machine pieced a churn dash this winter, and I used that... that method.
Can you describe the method better than I did so that the tape knows what we're talking about?
I'm not sure I can. Now what I did was I drew on one piece of my fabric squares, and then I drew a diagonal line on that square and stitched a quarter inch from that diagonal line on either side, and then I cut the cutting lines and opened up two squares. I don't know if that describes...
They became triangles.
Right, they became triangles when I cut across mm-hmm. the diagonal line that had been drawn.
And so you end up with a grid that you have stitched and another grid that you have cut, and you end up with lots of triangles.
Lots of triangles.
Yeah, but you only had to mark the top fabric.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And so I, of course, marked the lighter fabric,
right,
which was easier.
I think it's Johann or someone has a book on that. Who in your family quilted?
My grandmother on my father's side of the family, my grandmother Austin.
What was her first name?
Her first name was Elsie.
And do you know her maiden name?
Yes, excuse me. Her maiden name was Lucas. Lucas, L-U-C-A-S. All of the quilts that I slept under when I was growing up, I suppose, were made by her. These quilts in this room are quilts that were hers. I can't imagine growing up and not having quilts to sleep under. I slept under a lot of, two or three quilts on the bed in a cold room. And to grandmother, a quilt was just, well, everybody was supposed to have quilts. I know she gave us a lot of quilts. I don't ever remember a presentation being made of a quilt. I just remember that there might be a new quilt that she had brought down to the house. It was just a normal function to have quilts. She made the tops. She pieced the tops herself. And then the ladies in the church or in the community would get together for quiltings, or quiltins as they called them. And Well, I forgot
what
I was
types
gonna say.
Of quilts did she make?
She made, basically they were scrap quilts. Her favorite pattern was the, what she called the double nine patch, which was a 12-inch nine patch block and alternate blocks, and it had little four patches. I don't know if I've described that adequately for the tape, but to her, a quilt, in fact to me when I was growing up, a nine patch was a quilt. I didn't know about a lot of the other patterns. I just thought if you made a quilt, it would be a nine patch. I remember piecing a little tiny doll quilt, and I wanted it to be rectangular, but I also wanted it to be a nine patch. So what I ended up with was a nine patch with three patches attached to the end of it that didn't match it, but that was my doll quilt. I never quilted it, it was just a top. I remember Daddy saying, if you would give that to Grandmother, I'm sure she would take it down to the church and have the ladies quilt it for you. Her favorite method of quilting was what she called shells, and I think it's what some people call fans. And she enjoyed quilting in that fashion, I think because it was easy to quilt that way at the frame. Mm-hmm. I've never quilted in that fashion, but the churn dash that I spoke of just a minute ago is something that I intend to quilt in fans or shells.
Do you recall her doing any applique work?
Yes, she did a butterfly quilt. Actually, I don't know if she did a whole quilt or not. She did a butterfly quilt top, and I own that top now, and I intend to quilt it one of these days. I've heard people say that that we should leave the antique tops as they are and not quilt them.
This is Joy Peterson recording Donna Duncan. It's JDP 28, side 2, tape 1, May 26, 1988, in Eminence, Kentucky, in Donna's home. Donna, we were talking on the other side of this tape about your grandmother having pieced or having appliqued the top of a butterfly quilt, and your concern about whether or not you would or would not quilt out that quilt. What is your opinion on this?
I intend to quilt this quilt top because there's something in me that wants to continue something that my grandmother started. Besides this butterfly quilt, I also have a breast and plate quilt top that she had pieced, and one of her double nine patch quilt tops that was totally scraps that I also intend to piece. So I have three quilt tops I intend to piece. When Grandmother first died, I didn't want the quilt tops. I had not been quilting very long, and I thought, well, I want to work with new quilts and new fabric, and it takes a lot of time to quilt anything, and I want to work on something that I have really done myself from scratch. A friend of mine, Pam McDonald, had been quilting an antique quilt top that she had gotten at a yard sale or something, and she received so much pleasure from finishing something that someone had started that I sort of got the bug to do it myself, and I realized that I had those quilt tops available to me if I would just ask for them. So I told my parents that I would like to have one of the three tops that were at Grandmother's house, and I told them where in the house they were. They had not removed everything from her house at that time. And I said, just pick out one, it doesn't matter. I would just like to have one of them, and I will quilt it one of these days. So when they came to visit me in 1986 in the summer, they brought all three for me. So I have all three of them. Because I don't have any other sisters, because I don't have any sisters, and my dad is the only living child of my grandmother, and he had a brother who died as a young boy. So my brother and I are the only grandchildren, and I am the only granddaughter. So I guess they decided I should have them since I was a quilter.
When did your grandmother Austin die?
She died in 1984, in the late part of the year.
Mm-hmm.
She was 86 when she died.
Are there any men in your family who have quilted?
No. It was not considered at all the thing to do for men to quilt, I suppose. Grandmother was, when she learned that I was taking quilting classes, she didn't ask me directly. I think she didn't want to hurt my feelings, but after I had left, she said, "Why does Donna need to go to school to learn to quilt? As far as she was concerned, if you were born female, you knew everything you needed to know to quilt." And I think that's sort of the attitude of that part of the country, that women did sewing and men did not.
And she was from what part of Tennessee?
The western part of Tennessee, also near New Bern, Dyer County, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard of any men who quilt?
Yes. Besides, should I name any?
We're curious to know if you've seen any of their work and if you feel that men quilting differently than women and who they are.
Well, I've seen Paul McDade's work, and I didn't see it up real close. He lectured at Moorhead when I was there for that workshop, that meeting and workshop. I admire his work. I think he does some very good work. I have not seen any other men's work. I have read about different men in magazines, though I cannot remember their names. And I have read about men in history who have quilted, quilted it during times of illness as they were recuperating. So it doesn't surprise me mm-hmm. that a man would quilt.
Have there been periods in your life when you've been too busy to quilt?
Not really long periods, just, you know, there's always Christmas and the summer hubbub of youth activities at the church or something like that when I might be too busy to quilt. I honestly don't think in the last 3 years there's been a day that I've woke up that I have not thought about quilting and what I was going to work on in quilting, or I would do sketches, or I'm always quilting, I think. And I'm always finding new designs. I copy designs off of tabletops, the way the wood is laid in the tabletop. My husband went to the restroom one day when we were eating at a restaurant, and by the time he came back, I had sketched the whole tabletop. And he laughs about that, you know, or I'll sketch the ceiling at the church, or I'll sketch the linoleum. The front of magazines, there's some puzzle books put out by Dell, and some of their covers have some what I think would be a good quilt design. So I'm always working on things like this. I have a piece of music that I borrowed from the church that has some angels on it that I think would make a good quilting design. So I think I'm always thinking about quilting. And I really haven't been too busy, though, that I couldn't quilt. Like I said, there may be weeks or, you know, a week at a time, a month at a time, but it hasn't really stopped. I really haven't reached any dry spells.
How much time do you spend quilting?
That's sort of hard. I really don't know. I really don't. I would say that I probably average 2 or 3 hours a day. That's an average. You know, some days I might not do more than 30 minutes. But I spend a right, as the people in West Tennessee would say, a right good bit of time doing it.
Where do you quilt?
I quilt at home, usually in the den in front of the television set. I use a hoop when I'm in the den. I have a large floor frame in the living room, which I'm going to move to the guest room once I get the guest room in good order. There's good light in the guest room, and I would like to have my frame up there. So when I quilt at the frame, I, of course, don't watch television, but instead I'll turn on the radio and usually listen to classical music while I quilt, unless there's something else I need to listen to, that's perhaps some tape I need to listen to. Sometimes my husband has a sermon or something he wants me to check out for him.
Mm-hmm. What time of day do you quilt?
I quilt, I don't know, in the morning sometimes. I'm not real good about doing my housework first and then quilting. I have learned that if you do the housework first, there may not be time for quilting. So I generally quilt and then I try to fly around and shake the house into order before somebody comes in the door. So I like to quilt in the morning when the light is nice. And then I like to quilt at night when I'm, particularly if my husband is home. I like to be in the room that he's in. Quilting is something that we can do, that I can do while we're together.
Where do you get your quilt designs?
From magazines, from books, and out of my own head.
What are some of the patterns you've enjoyed making?
I've enjoyed doing a double wedding ring that I had read Mary Ellen Hopkins' book for the double wedding ring, which is a machine-pieced item, and I enjoyed doing that. That one's sort of funny. Can I elaborate on that
a
little bit?
Mm-hmm.
I did the arcs and the, what's the other little piece?
The intersections?
The melons. I think she calls them mm-hmm. melons. I did mm-hmm. the arcs and the melons, and I had the centers cut out, and something happened, and I had to lay it aside. I think I was teaching 4-H clothing, and that was consuming a lot of my time, and I was helping the youth get ready for a trip, raising funds for their trip, and one thing led to another, and I didn't get it done. Then after I had back surgery, I had everything done except the intersections, and that's something that you do by machine. When the doctor finally said that I could sit long enough to eat and I could sit another 15 minutes, instead of sitting 30 minutes, I would eat, but I would stand to drink my coffee because I would save that 15 minutes to go upstairs to the sewing machine, and I put the intersections in 15 minutes at a time over a 3 or 4 week period.
When was
it? It made me feel human again.
When was your back surgery?
In November of 86.
What was the background of that? What had happened to you? Anything, a car accident or anything specific?
Nothing that I'm aware of. I think it was just the wear and tear through the years. Possibly coughing even, or sleeping on my stomach. The doctor didn't have any real explanation. I know that when I do have chest congestion, I do cough rather fiercely. And it's very possible that maybe didn't cause it, but did the end of the job. And I had
a disc problem.
It was a herniated disc. I still don't quilt too long at a time. I maybe quilt 30 minutes and get up, and then another 30 minutes and get up. So I don't stay seated and leaned over the frame for a long period of time. I would like to, and if I allowed myself, I would just sit in a chair all day and quilt, but I don't allow myself to do that because I value feeling good.
Have you totally returned to good health?
Yes. Yes, I'm.
You're not bothered with it?
I'm not bothered with it. I still take care of it, but I'm not, I don't have any pain.
Do you have to exercise specifically for it?
Yes, I do exercises to strengthen leg, back, and abdominal muscles. And I walk up to about 4 miles a day. I haven't been walking lately. I had a little fall on the steps and injured my foot, and the doctor said that maybe I should stay off my foot for a little while.
What time of day do you walk?
In the summertime, I walk early in the day, like it's 6:30 or 7 in the morning. 4 miles takes about an hour. In the wintertime, I walk when it gets warm enough that I can stand to be out. So since I'm a homemaker, I can more or less set my own schedule for walking.
You mentioned teaching 4-H clothing. Could we develop that a little bit?
I just did that 1 year. And I had three little girls, 10 years old, that came to my home after school one day a week for about 6 or 7 weeks. And I taught them how to make a skirt. And they did, each one did make a skirt and wore it in their fashion show for the Henry County 4-H fashion show.
Mm-hmm. And what youth work have you been involved with?
I have been involved with teaching Vacation Bible School. I have been involved with youth activities as far as some youth trips that have taken place through our church. The young people go to a camp that's called Centrifuge. It's called that because they separate their lives out and then put their lives back together again. They have gone to South Carolina to a center there where Centrifuge is held every summer. And they have to, it costs so much to go that they generally raise funds through the church. By doing such things as salad luncheons on Sunday and car washes, which is not my favorite thing to do, so I sort of zeroed in on the salad luncheons. They did continental breakfast on Sunday morning, for which they did not charge, but they were glad to receive donations. And the continental breakfast was my project. That was the thing I was officially in charge of. I was also officially in charge of baking all the bread for the Sunday salad luncheons that they had.
Have you regularly baked bread in your home?
Yes. I'm not currently baking bread. I think it's something that you get in the habit of doing. And while I was in the habit of doing it, it just seemed normal to me to make 2 loaves of bread every 5 days. And once I got out of the habit, I really haven't gotten back in the habit again. But I like to make bread. And I've heard people say, if you bake bread, you'll get too fat because you'll just eat it all the time. If you make it every week, it starts being common, and we don't gorge ourselves on it all like that if I'm regular about making it.
Have you taught quilting?
Yes, I have. I taught quilting. I taught the first course that I taught was in the summer of 86. I taught it in my home, and I had 8 students from this community in that class. Then I taught it at Calico Mouse twice in the spring of 87. I've also taught a strip quilted vest class, one at Calico Mouse and one at home. And let's see, I've taught the beginner class once more at home, and I've taught the beginner class at Bethlehem, which is a community about 10 miles from here, maybe not even that far.
Do you enjoy teaching?
I really do. It's usually about the third lesson of a beginner class before things start clicking, and it's real exciting to me when I realize that the students are looking in magazines and they're showing me something that they are excited about on their own. It's not an excitement that I have generated, but they have caught the fever. So I really do enjoy teaching.
What, in your opinion, makes a good quilt?
Well, I go for technique. I really like technique as far as color and as far as even stitches and perfect points and all of that. But I hedge just a little bit because I think one thing that makes a good quilt is the enjoyment of making it. And if a person thinks of it as drudgery, then I don't think it's a good quilt. But if a person really enjoys what they're doing and is happy about it and wants to do another one, then I'm not too worried. I mean, I know as far as competition you want perfect points and all of that, but a good quilt is one that makes somebody happy. I also think a good quilt is one that someone wants to snuggle under. I think quilts ought to be used and touched.
Why do you make quilts?
Because it pleases me. I can't draw. I'm not that type of artistic. I've always enjoyed working with needle and thread. And I can just go off in another world when I start quilting, when I start piecing or quilting. Just the feel of the fabric and the batting and seeing it come together. I also quilt because my husband encourages me. He's very understanding of the fact that there are little tiny threads and little snips of batting and little snips of fabric all over the house. He thinks it makes it a home, I think. He's proud of me and he brags about me to other people. And, well, the strokes that we get for quilting, when somebody admires a job well done, that's another reason I quilt.
Is this the reason that you quilted to begin with, or is there a different reason?
I had always wanted to make a quilt, and when I took the first class that I took at American Accents, I believed that I would make a quilt. I was a little bit disappointed that we were going to make a wall hanging, but I thought, well, I can go through a wall hanging, and then I will make a quilt. To me, a quilt was a quilt on a bed. And that's still what it is to my dad. Daddy said the last time I visited, he said, well, now could you make a real quilt this winter if you wanted to? And my mom said, honey, that's not the kind of quilt she makes. My mother understands that a quilt can be a small piece and it can hang on a wall or do any other number of functions. To Daddy, a quilt is a quilt on a bed. And I did assure him that I could make a whole quilt this winter if I intended to. I did not make a whole quilt this winter, but I could have. He did throw out the gauntlet, and I did start one, and I think I am going to get it quilted, so I will be able to show my daddy that I can make a whole quilt.
Do you enjoy making the top or actually doing the quilting?
I really enjoy making the top the most, but I have been doing some quilting in the last several weeks, the actual quilting, and I'm really enjoying it, and I think maybe I'm going into a new phase. As many tops as I've got completed that aren't quilted, it's really time for me to go into a new phase. So I'm expecting to start finishing some of the things that I have started. Pam MacDonald is another reason that I do that. She is a project person. She starts a project, she works through until she gets to the end, and she finishes it. I am a process person, so I have lots of things started, and I keep having new ideas. When I have a new idea, I have to do it. I can't just wait until I finish the project I'm working on. Consequently, I have a lot of things started, and not many things finished. Pam has things that she has finished, but she doesn't keep a lot of things going. And we feed each other, and we help each other to find the better part of ourselves. So I'm learning to enjoy the actual quilting now.
What makes a good quilt stitch?
An even stitch and a proper tension, I think, are most important. I do like small stitches, but I think that the size of the stitch is probably less important than the evenness and the proper tension.
Did you ever participate in a quilting bee?
No, I have not. And I would like to, but I never have. Maybe I'll have one of my own.
If there's a difference between a quilting bee and a quilting party, what is the difference?
I really never had thought of that. Maybe a quilting party is just where everybody gets together and shares. Now, you ask about quilting bees. Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society sponsors quilting bees. I have participated in those, but they're not what I, when I hear the term quilting bee, I think of a bunch of ladies getting together and working together on one quilt. which is what grandmother called a quilting. A quilting party to me would be more like where you get together and show what you've done and encourage each other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the definition for the two really is.
How would you feel about other people quilting on your quilt?
There are some quilts that I would be willing for other people to quilt on, and there are some quilts that I'd rather do the whole thing myself. I like to have the same size stitches on my quilt. But I don't know, I've got some quilts that I've done the whole thing myself, and they show a progression where I get better, and then perhaps an interruption in my life, and I get worse, and then I get better again. So I've got one quilt that has a number of different size stitches, so I don't know why I should care if anybody else puts different size stitches on my quilt, but I mean, since I have put different size stitches on my own quilts.
Do you belong to any quilters' organizations?
I belong to the Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society and the American Quilters Society, and that's all. There is a group of four friends in this community who quilt, and we get together from time to time as the occasion warrants to baste each other's quilts. And we talk about quilting a lot. We go to the same church. And generally on Sunday morning, well, we all get there real early, maybe 30 minutes before Sunday school starts. And invariably, if two or three are gathered together, we will talk about quilts.
Have you held any offices in these two organizations that you mentioned?
I was, at the last meeting of KHQS, I was elected as a director. I understand that the new bylaws are going to eliminate the positions of director, and I've been asked to serve as publicity chairman. So I have not, but I am up to become one starting July 1.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what is meant by a Kentucky quilt, or have you heard of quilts that are called Kentucky quilts?
No. I'm not sure what that means.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any quilt books?
I have a lot of quilt books.
What is your favorite quilt book?
As a beginner, I liked Diane Leone's The Sampler Quilt. I also like that there's a Farm Journal quilt book. I think it's called Let's Make a Patchwork Quilt, and it's also designed for sampler blocks. And I think those are two really good books for beginning quilters. As far as quilt history, I like Remember Me by Linda Otto Lipset. I really enjoy reading the history of different quilt makers. And right now I'm currently interested in doing a feathered star quilt. And I have Marcia McCloskey's feathered star quilts. And I also have Marianne Fonz's Fine Feathers, which is a guide to making traditional feather quilting designs. And I've even used this book on a little tiny quilt that I made, that I just finished. Finished on Sunday. So those are some books that I'm interested in.
Do you get any quilt magazines?
Yes, I get Quilters Newsletter Magazine and Lady Circle Patchwork Quilts. And, let's see. Quilting USA, which is a new quilt publication. And the American Quilter, of course, I received that as a member of the American Quilt Society. And I pick up other magazines at the newsstand. Every time I go to a bookstore, I have to see what new books there are.
Do you follow patterns exactly as they're written in these magazines?
Not usually. In the first place, I don't trust the reproduction process. So I generally will redraft them because I want it drafted. I want it done right, and I guess I'm gutsy enough to think that I know how to do it really, really right. And also, sometimes the design in the book or magazine is not exactly the size I want, so I draft it to whatever size I want. I learned a lot about drafting from Barbara Hart in the advanced quilting class, and that was just wonderful for me. I loved the part of the class where we did drafting. That was just down my alley. I suppose my mathematics background helps me there.
What do you do with your finished quilts?
Oh, I hang them on the wall. If I ever get what my daddy calls a real quilt done, I will sleep under it. I did do a quilt, a tied quilt, for my bed, because I had taken so many quilting classes and did not have any real quilt to show for it. And my husband is so long-suffering in what I do with quilting that I really thought we needed a quilt that I had made for us to sleep under. So I have a quilt, but it's not quilted, it's tied. But it's very warm, and in fact, he asked for another quilt to be made and tied, not quilted, for him to have in his recliner in the wintertime. So this winter, I did complete a lover's knot quilt. I used Ellen Burns. Is that are you familiar with her? I don't have the book handy. But the title of the book is Lover's Knot Quilt. And I used that pattern. And it was a quick pieced on the machine quilt. And I tied it. And he's real happy with it. And in fact, he took it with him to Lexington, so I can't show it to you today.
Maybe you can get a picture for it.
I do have a picture
good,
of it.
Good. Well, are you implying that you use a different batting in them when you tie them so they're warmer than if they'd been quilted?
Well, I do use a different bat. Well, so the one on my bed, I have an extra loft batting. I would not try to quilt with